welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And again, we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and some elements of science and some other ideas and thoughts as well. Tonight, I thought I'd talk about the metaphysical paradox of struggle. Ooh, big words. And it isn't as big and difficult sounding as the title might imply. Basically, what I'm trying to talk about tonight, and of course, if you want to, you can call in. The numbers are right on your screen there. But I thought we would talk about how it is and why that we, human beings, and other creatures in this world as well, have such a difficult time. Why is life so difficult? Why is it a struggle? Especially if the being that is our creator, that has made it available for us to live and to co-create if we choose to with it, is a great and wonderful being, then why is there this struggle that so much that we face on a regular basis? We being all of life, really. Most life struggles at some point in its development. And I think that there is an important reason for it. Now, some of you are going to say, oh, isn't that about evolution then? Evolution is the reason, the survival of the fittest, and on and on and on. And there's some of that in there. So that's the reason, you know, we talk about everything. But it's a lot larger and more, we'll say, hidden, esoteric, than it would be implied by strictly an evolutionary explanation. So again, let me define the words metaphysical paradox. So we have a basis. Metaphysical means that there's something in the physics that is beyond what we presently understand and can be proven in the laboratory, etc., about physics in terms of struggle. And so it's metaphysical. And also, paradox means that there is a contradiction of sorts. In other words, it's sort of like, well, I'm God. Well, not really God, but let's pretend I am. And I want to make life to be something of a replication of my basic tenets. Not copy my thought, not generally do what I think in, you know, as whatever I want to create, but to be co-creative and to think on its own. And so that's the process I'm looking for. And the paradox is that I am a God of love and a God of freedom, seeking freedom and love. And I'm a God seeking cooperation and sharing and an intelligence that is both acted upon with other life and shared. I'm all those things, and yet the result, in part, is struggle. That's the paradox. Paradox are two things that on their own you can explain, but together they kind of like don't make a lot of sense unless you see beyond the smaller concepts and look to a bigger concept that may be hidden. That's what the word paradox means. Oh, you didn't know that? Okay. And if you did, great. That's fantastic. Okay, so that's what I'm talking about. This is the kind of thing that perplexes people. And unfortunately, for some, it leads some people to believe that the universe doesn't have a creator. There couldn't be a God, as I defined God to be, or most people would like to define God as, because that God, in their mind, in these people's minds, some people's minds, would not want to create the kind of struggles for life that exist, especially here on Earth. And so, for some people, they turn away from the concept of there being a creator, and believe that the universe is created randomly in some chaotic way, applying only certain laws of evolutionary design, and that, unfortunately, do not adhere to anything that we would call spiritual. So that's to them, that's their conclusion. Tonight I hope to show how that's not, and explain how that's not really the case. So let me continue on. All right. So here are some of the issues, and some of you have heard these issues before. Hopefully you have if you listened in. And that is that freedom is the criteria first applied by God in terms of attempting to give something to its own creation. It's going to try to give freedom. But freedom is not something that can be actually given, because the paradox of freedom, remember the word paradox, is that in order for a freedom to exist, there's no way to give it. There's a way to allow others to choose to have it. Okay. Did you follow that? So we find the first element of our paradox as soon as we come to the beginning of God's own mind. God wants us to be free. But God can't give totally that freedom to us, because it will then be forced upon us. So we have to choose to take it on to ourselves. If we do not choose to be free, regardless of what God would like us to have, it can't do anything about that. Interesting problem. So that's the beginning of the paradox, because right off the bat, right at the beginning, the most important part, the very first part of our Creator's mind is that we are free to think and free to create. And that doesn't mean that we can do anything we want, but we are free to do whatever we want, and then for the results may not be what we like, because there are some issues in terms of the way others are creating that may impinge upon us. But nonetheless, we are free. We have freedom. And so freedom has a cost. And the first cost of freedom is that if and when we choose to create in ways that those around us are not necessarily choosing, even though ours are more virtuous, even though ours are more like our Creator's, we may end up in a struggle. Right off the bat. Why? Well, today, as an example, someone I know got a new bed, okay? And they went ahead and they laid on a bed in a store and thought it was a great bed, and it was a real expensive bed, it was nice and everything and all that business. But the problem was that it appears, I'm not saying positive here, that the bedding company, the company that makes these particular beds, put one kind of bed in the store, which they build special for their models, and then they sell a much less quality one to people after they order them. It's called a bait and switch. I'm sure most of you have had that happen at some point in your life. But that's a struggle, because a virtuous world would not represent a world in which people would be struggling, because there are people who are unfortunately creating against their Creator. Creator doesn't do bait and switch, but people who are greedy do, right? Okay. And so there's an example of there being some freedom of choice. Of course, there's freedom of choice to buy the bed you want, but not when the others that are working together in that same world, in that same society, are choosing to create a fraud, a bait and switch thing, and not sell the bed that was the bed that they represented to be sold. And of course, this is done in many different parts of our life, unfortunately. Not everywhere, and that's not always the case, but this is seemingly one of those situations. It may not be a hope in total, meaning that maybe the dealer who sold the bed didn't know, although it's hard to believe that, but at this point, keep an open mind. So here's an example right there, right today. This happened, I know the whole situation. And it's unfortunate. But here's a circumstance where someone is trying to function cooperatively and hopefully not doing these same things to others, and yet this is being part of the creative process that they're involved in. So you can see how struggle becomes an issue almost immediately. As soon as there is freedom, and some of that freedom could be used to create against our Creator. That is a tough one, isn't it? Now, there's an interesting little sideline to this, in that those who are doing the bait and switching are actually creating a struggle for themselves as well. It's weird. Their own greed ultimately destroys them. And no matter how much they make additional money on each bed that they sell, because they sell a much lower grade of bed, they make one anyway. It doesn't really help them, because the greed itself destroys their senses. It causes more aging. It makes there's karma that comes to play later in their life, not immediately, not necessarily immediately anyway. And so this is a struggle for all. It's not just a struggle for those who are being the victims of this crime. And the other part about this is that the struggle has some meaning to it. Here's an example. The meaning is that one has to be obviously more cautious in this arena, beds, you know, because apparently it may be epidemic that quite a few manufacturers of beds are no longer making the bed that they purport to sell. So now you have to learn something about the darker side of existence, the side that is against being co-creative. And so one has to become more guarded and more wise about how they interact. Because remember, the third part of our Creator's design is for us to interact together, and hopefully in ways that are intelligent and helpful. Now, while someone's trying to steal from you, the best way you can be helpful is to alert others about this. Guess what I'm doing right now? Hello, I'm alerting you. Okay, right. No, I'm not going to tell you the name of the bed, though. I guess if you email me, I will. Because at this point, I don't have enough proof to know for sure what I'm saying is correct. But if I know it by next week, maybe I'll let you know. All right, so this is part of our struggle. The freedom aspect of God is so important. It's so critical that we suffer and struggle because of it. It's a sacrifice to exist with freedom, but it's a grand one. It's a terrific one, because it allows us to be co-creators. If we were to give up the freedom, we would give up our co-creation with our Creator, and then we become puppets. Usually this happens when there's tyrannical governments and others who want to control us. It isn't God, obviously, doing that. So others try to replace God. They say, oh, my thinking is more important than God's. So my actions are more important, and my ways of creation are more important, and you're going to follow my way, or the highway, you see. And then the struggle can occur with that. You can have insurrection or revolution. You can have terrible things happen when people try to do that. So obviously, this paradox of struggle is a pretty important factor, and I haven't even got started yet. Uh-oh. Now, the second part of God's mind comes in about giving. God is a loving and giving God. It does want us to have what we need to help to grow and help others to grow. But it does so in ways that permits us to gain wisdom in our own givingness. And that wisdom comes at considerable cost. What's wisdom? Wisdom is where the giving that we do promotes others to give wisely as well, preferably even more wise than we were in the first place. That's what wisdom is, okay? And so the way that God gives to us is the same way that we are hopefully going to give to others with wisdom. Here's the rub on that deal. Okay, let's say I choose to be a giving person because I want to be like the God that is my creator, but I have not yet gained enough wisdom in my givingness. So I have love, but I don't have wisdom. That's a bad combination, okay, because it leads to the following problem. And that is that the more I give to others, the more they may become dependent upon my giving rather than actualized in becoming more wise in their giving and more giving as well themselves. This is a big problem. Some people say, oh, that's the thing about where people on welfare become dependent, and instead of helping them, it hurts them. That's one example in terms of governmental issues. This is much bigger than government, though, I'm talking about. But there's an example of it. And so wise giving is really important, and the struggle is to not give, not love, unless there is a tremendous amount of empathy and understanding, consciousness, with the giving. Giving without consciousness, without understanding, is also giving without wisdom. And the results are pretty bad. They can be very harmful, toxic to others and to ourselves. And so God seeks for us to find this out and to temper our giving with wisdom. And on the opposite side, to temper our acceptance of other people giving to us only when those others are exhibiting elements of wisdom equal to or beyond our own, you see. So you don't want to be taking from others when they are giving unwisely, as well as you don't want to give unwisely. And if you do, if you take something from others or if you give something to others unwisely, either way, the results are struggle. The struggle is as significant as the loss of freedom might be. In a sense, it's shackling yourself to receiving and or giving things that are harmful, even toxic. What a terrible situation, my God. Okay, so these paradoxes of struggle are there because we are not just, we'll call ourselves lower life forms. The lower life forms are really in the struggle that we're talking about as much as we are, but the only parts of them that's really growing is their soul. Their soul grows from the collection of the interactions of all of the life forms that it informs. So it works on a different model. That's where you get into that evolutionary thing. It takes a large number of flies, a billion of them, and the combined interactions of the flies affects the instincts, thought, preconceived thought, of the soul of that particular kind of fly. And the soul grows slowly over time. Humans don't work that way at all. We have an individual soul. Only one being, one life form, is informed by each soul. So the whole model is reversed. And instead of a lot of life forms averaging out, trying to develop freedom of thought and wisdom, instead, we turn it around and we become the creators directly on an individual level, which has its own problems, and we are making the choices on an individual level rather than our soul making the choices for us. So we basically are leading the soul around rather than vice versa, and the struggle now becomes one of us becoming more soul-like while we are an individual life form and existing in various realms right now, obviously the physical where I'm speaking from and you're listening from. So this struggle that we're involved in is a spiritual struggle. because we are aware of God's mind. That's the key that allows us to preempt our soul and to not have to listen to the instincts or preconceived thought of our soul, but rather to be independent in our thinking and in our choices and in our giving. A wonderful process, if you ask me. I love that. But one which enhances the struggle, and let me explain how it does that. For most of the animal kingdom, excepting our own pets, because they are kind of in a special class. But if you accept the higher life form of pets that we might have, then this is true. And that is that the lower lives of all of the animals, etc., and plants as well, are being affected by the eventual development of a group soul that handles that subspecies or species. And it is that which is going on, which we call, unfortunately, and don't understand it, I experience in, we'll call it the environmental influences being the dominant factor, and there not being any true thought by the individuals, at least not any significant thought. There are small amounts of choices that the individual creatures can make, but they're very small. And so we have basically almost like a collective mind that is functioning to develop a soul. In our case, our mind is the complete or almost complete creator of what we do. Our soul has very little to do with the choices we make. It does have to do with how we are born, with what we'll call it attributes to some extent, mostly based upon karmic factors. But nonetheless, we are truly independent. Truly independent. And the concepts of Darwinian evolution have very little to do with us unless we choose to function that way. So we are spiritual beings rather than Darwinian evolutionary beings, although you could claim that when we are choosing to not be spiritual, it looks a lot like we are no different than the animals around us. Wow. Maybe even less developed than some of our own pets. Wow. Then the struggle ensues. The struggle is caused by the fact that it is completely, in my opinion, a correct statement to say that Darwinian evolution is based on survival of the fittest, on adaptability, that those elements of a life form that are most adaptable to its environment continue on based upon natural selection, and those that are not die out because of survival of the fittest. And so that becomes the struggle, because we put ourselves into that forceful model. It's a very forceful model. Survival of the fittest, how could that not be a forceful? It's terribly forceful, right? And so we put ourselves into that struggle whenever we make choices that are not spiritual. I hope you're following that. You've heard me say that many times before. Hopefully it makes more sense now as I'm explaining this business of the metaphysical paradox of struggle. And so we are making these struggles for ourselves, and we are going through this process continually of attempting to do what? Well, attempting to wake up and realize that we are the co-creators and not just some kind of object that is being pushed around, unless we choose to make our life that way. If you choose to make your life that way, then you're going to have a big trouble, a lot of problems. Okay, now, let's go a step further. Why do human beings do that then? It doesn't make any sense, at least if you kind of look at it from a total big picture. You might say, well, that's kind of not very smart. Well, it doesn't make sense unless you're in illusion. If you believe what I said earlier, that some people believe that there's no God, or the God, if God does exist, it doesn't really connect to who we are or what we are. It's some kind of maybe clockmaker or something. And it just made the world and then kind of left it alone or something. This is the mistake. This is the illusion. Once you get into that illusion, then you're in a mechanical model, which leads you to the material world and to Darwinian evolution. And now you're stuck. Because that thinking model produces more and more life struggle. It enhances and forces the person into a fearful model about existence and consciousness and death. It reduces life to a series of events instead of to a development of a spiritual being that has endless and, we'll say, wonderful possibilities for its own self-development. It removes even the idea of self-development. Everything becomes, in some way, a structure of some forceful other circumstances that are pushing on and molding us. Behaviorism becomes the model, psychologically speaking, that most people come up with. So these are the negatives. These are the parts of life that lead to dismay and depression and to a sense of dread of existence, even though people who might have generally positive things going on in their life, underneath it, there's going to be this element of despair. Because no matter what they do, they're in a struggle. No matter what they do, they don't see themselves as eternal beings. No matter what they do, they most likely think that at death, somebody turns off a switch and that's it. Bye-bye. A frightening prospect, if you ask me. And one that doesn't make much sense, because why live at all? As a conscious being of a human level, I can understand how a housefly might, because it doesn't have enough consciousness to contemplate the things I'm telling you. But once you do, you suffer and you struggle with the very notion that you believe your own consciousness will terminate at some time in what really is a very short term, distant future. That's a kind of an odd way of putting it. A short term future rather than a distant future. Because even if you believe it is someplace way in the future, it's still going to happen. So you have to ask yourself, well, if my existence consciously is going to cease, what meaning is there in what I'm doing right now? If I don't continue on and I live another couple decades or whatever it's going to be, or five or whatever, what's the difference? Where does that fit in the scheme of things? And for a lot of people, it would be a sense of despair, if not downright fear, of that kind of existence. So this is really something we have to look at and realize that one of the struggles we have in life is a struggle in overcoming our own fear of death and other factors coming from a non-spiritual or a lacking of spiritual thought and consciousness about our very existence. Now, and I think this really applies today, by the way. More and more people, I am concerned, have pulled away from the concept of being a co-creator with their creator and instead believe in a very numbing, terminating kind of philosophy of existence where at death you just cease to exist and all thought, all consciousness is gone. And if you think about it, we move so slowly in our development that a lifetime for most people does not create a lot of change in getting us closer to being a much greater being. And, of course, in the model that I'm suggesting, which is a more spiritual model, people have hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes, for much longer periods than just physical life, in which they develop and grow to be much greater than they are. And it includes reincarnation, etc. So this is part of the process of change to get over the struggle. If we're going to move to a less struggling existence, we need to, first of all, do what we're doing right now, which is examine the nature of what causes it, and then make the appropriate changes so that life is less of a struggle, if not a struggle at all. Now, you might say, well, what about those people who are struggling and are doing great things? Why are they still having struggles? Well, because, and this is where it gets complicated, if you take on the responsibility for much more of the world, much more people, then your struggle is not just about yourself anymore, which is kind of narrow, but becomes the struggle to help others at the same time. And those others may have many more difficulties, may even resist, may even be creating a lot more problems for themselves, a lot more struggle. And then it's somewhat out of your control because you have to give them the freedom that God gives to all beings. At the same time, you have to try to help them to become wiser without forcing them to. And to accept the results of their struggle as being your struggle by seeing that your life in all life is interconnected with them in some ways. Wow. That's the problem. The more you become conscious, the more you become responsible, the greater the kind of struggle that you're dealing with. It's no longer just what you do. It's what all those who you are involved with and interacting with are doing. And some of them might be far less, we'll say, virtuous in their creations. And then you take responsibility for their lack of virtue, and your life becomes a struggle. An interesting point. Maybe you didn't know that, maybe you hadn't thought of that, but that's what happens as we become more spiritual. We tend to change our viewpoint, but that change of viewpoint increases our struggle, not on a personal level as much as on a group conscious level. Others become just as important, if not most, more so than ourselves, and now we take on the struggles of so many others on a much larger scale. But there's ways out of dealing with that, and there are ways of dealing with that that take us away from some of the struggle as well, which I'm going to explain in a little while. And by the way, speaking about how much time we have, I assume, although I didn't confirm this, I believe it's true, that we tonight will be going till, again, about 15 minutes after the hour, which gives us more time. So we're going to be able to take our time in looking how to overcome these struggles and to make ourselves into greater beings, even though we are taking on these greater levels of responsibility for so many other people, which enhances our own struggle. It enhances it unless we do certain things, which I will explain. Okay, so let me go through this so that we could kind of tighten this up. The first element of the metaphysical paradox of struggle is that God seeks for us to be free. And in seeking for us to be free and giving that opportunity to us, we have to choose to either take it or not. If we choose to not take it, we end up with an enormous struggle. If we take on the responsibility of those that are not taking it, are not taking the opportunity to be free, we struggle for them, their sakes. We may have overcome that in ourselves, which is a wonderful thing. But now we are taking on a greater level of responsibility, and we have far less control because it isn't our life, it's these others, and we have to follow the same model that God does if we're going to be virtuous, and that is we can't force others to be free. We could only help them to see it, help them to understand it, and to choose it if they so therefore desire to and do so. Also, God seeks for us to be loving, but in wise ways. And again, it's our choice whether we're going to be wise in our giving or unwise. And even if we are wise in giving, eventually we reach a point where we seek to help others to do the same, and that most of our attention may be paid in that direction rather than about ourselves. We automatically, you could say, are giving, and even wise in giving. But that's not good enough anymore. We want to help others to do the same, but they have to choose to do it on their own, again, because of the freedom side of things. And so that creates a greater level of struggle for us, because we're taking responsibility for so many other people that we have very little really control about whatever they're doing. Yet we choose to do that because we're being spiritual. We're seeing ourselves as interconnected beings. Our lives are not separate. And it makes a difference to us. But we can't force others to change. We can only help to enlighten them and be good examples ourselves. And through that means, hopefully, they will see enough of it to make a difference. And then finally, on the interaction side, the interactions of people become a serious element to us beyond just our own choices of interacting. So the fact that we're not using bait and switch on beds doesn't change the reality that others are. And we need to help those others in various ways, sometimes maybe even turn them into some association or something if necessary, because they're not following this goodness, this virtue of doing the right thing, being interactively correct in trying to have truth in what they do and help others to experience more intelligence as they interact with us. That can only happen if you're creating more truth in their minds. And so this can occur, but unfortunately, once you start taking responsibility for others, you can lead yourself in great struggles. Those others may be criminals. They may be evil who seek to destroy you. They may want to come in and wipe you out because you are seeking to help them and others to interact in ways that are virtuous ways and that aren't dishonest. So the third way that I'm proposing can lead to direct struggles with evil if you really take on great responsibilities for a lot of other people. Because eventually you literally are bringing that evil around because they are looking for ways of attacking those that are going to expose them. And really, it is about exposing. You're not trying to necessarily harm them. You're trying to do the opposite. You're trying to help them to become more responsible by not ripping people off and doing despicable things, right? But at the same time, you don't have much control. I mean, if you really look at it, the control is on the other side still. You can do some things, but you can't do a lot. So again, the struggle becomes a kind of difficult thing to get through because it's so complex. And it isn't just based upon what individually someone says or does. It's so much based upon what others who may be scoundrels are doing or saying. Okay, so we're going to come back to the next half of the show. We'll be going for about 2.5 minutes now. And we'll go into some more solutions for the metaphysical paradox of struggle. And we'll see how we can reduce the struggle in our lives while we're improving and enhancing life in general in this world.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we're talking about the metaphysical paradox of struggle. Oh, sounds really important and big. And I hope that the very basic stuff I talked about, which ties together many different shows that we've had before, makes sense to you. Now, I want to go into how we can overcome these struggles. And I'll start with the question of freedom. And the struggle of freedom, for some people, is freedom in their own personal life. And those people at that level who are trying to be, quote-unquote, free in their thinking and creative, are usually not at a point where they're, quote-unquote, spiritually developing themselves very far. Because this is a very basic part of personality. And it oftentimes comes before someone is, quote-unquote, a spiritually disciplined person, although there's exceptions to this. So I just want to make that point clear that it starts at a relatively simplistic level. Where it becomes more of a problem is when we graduate to taking greater and greater levels of responsibility for the freedom of others. Then you start becoming truly a spiritually disciplined person, a person who is seeking to co-create with their creator by helping others to become freer, and not just themselves. And they're ensuring that others have freedom of choice and freedom to think and express themselves in all the interactions they have with us, with each, you know, with us, but also that the world around us is constructed in a way that follows as close as possible that particular model. These are challenging times for us right now. I'm going to give you some of my opinions, and that is that, to begin with, the present establishment governments in the world, and especially the newest one in the United States as far as the federal government is concerned, and some of the states, are following a progression of declining freedom for their citizens and are anti-constitutional in terms of the United States Constitution. They go against the tenets of the Constitution by substituting the freedom of the government for personal freedoms. When you have that type of system developing, which it is at the present time, you're heading towards tyranny and a non-free free market system, which we have, we call capitalism, but the most important thing is the system needs to be a free market. When you take, when the government controls most of the market in some ways by controlling usually major segments of the economy, it then removes freedom in terms of market. Market is really has to do with the third part of interactions between people, but it also has to do with freedom. And you stop creativity. You reduce creativity. You reduce creativity, reduce wealth, you reduce health, and eventually you reduce life. Because that's what we are here for, is to follow this first tenet of God. And when the government itself is going against that, it's going to do all the things I just said. Life expectancy will decline, quality of life will decline, and eventually the spiritual side of existence will seriously decline. You'll have a very material type of world. And the government almost inevitably becomes more and more tyrannical and abuses everything that it's supposed to be protecting. So these are the kinds of things that we're facing right now. And in order to change that, we need to be concerned about voting in new people who are going to be more concerned about the freedom that we have rather than the power and control that it has. And that's on an individual level and as a unit for the whole government. So if the government is functioning as a unit, which it is right now, more so than almost any time in the past, to grab power and control, usually exemplified by the people most in power, like the president, his cabinet, advisors, and people in Congress, you know, the people who are controlling Congress right now, et cetera. That sort of thing is a very serious problem. Also eventually gets into the courts. The courts come later, but it will affect the way justice is handled. So these are the things that we need to be concerned about if we're going to stop the struggle. Now, how do we change it? Well, vote in people who seek to create freedom, and freedom for the person, and freedom for the person as represented in a wise program or series of programs that balances itself without removing freedom from individuals. So the idea that you can't have freedom for groups without taking away freedom from individuals is absolutely bogus. That's the basis of the most radical and evil kinds of systems, which includes Marxist and Engels types of philosophies, and also almost all the fascistic philosophies. And it's pretty much determined by today by, in the United States and some other parts of the world, as a thing called progressivism, where progress towards the government controlling things and controlling us is the main emphasis for the structure. That's a very serious problem. Okay, so freedom on any governmental side is critical. If you don't have that, the society suffers enormously, and spiritually it will collapse. Okay, so then what else can we do besides voting in the right people and looking for people to vote for, and maybe running ourselves for various offices if that's necessary in the areas where there aren't people doing that, and being vocal and expressing to those people who are presently being tyrannical or trying to gain power that we don't like this, and we're going to do everything we can. Because when people are doing that, they, remember, are becoming more and more fearful in the process, as I described earlier in the first half of the show, and their own fears will cause them to back off to some extent. They are much more fearful than the rest of us, because they aren't getting closer to God. They're moving further away from God. So they seek to replace their spiritualness with power. And they could actually become a great evil by doing that. That's kind of the way you do become evil. So it's something we need to address. And then, in addition, other ways of helping to become free is to enhance the way that we intelligently interact so that those intelligent interactions, at least in a material sense, always are done in a virtuous way for the benefit of others rather than just trying to greedily get more ourselves. You might say, well, that isn't capitalism. Yes, it is. It's not. It's just not the capitalism that we're used to seeing. It isn't certainly communism. I'm not saying that people are entitled to get what they need based upon what others are capable of doing and then redistributing it to the people who just need something. Just the opposite. I'm saying that we need to look at this as a process in which we're going to help others become more creative themselves because we know how to do that better, maybe. And we become both an example as being creative, which may produce more money. It may do that. There's no reason it shouldn't. And at the same time, it doesn't prevent others from doing that. See, this is one of the problems. If you look at this as a zero-sum game, if I'm making more money than others have to make less, well, then you're not a capitalist, per se. You're actually just a kind of a very unvirtuous and selfish person. And that doesn't solve anything. You can use that method in any kind of system, and it will always lead to some kind of negative outcome. So the object here is to not see it as a zero-sum game, but rather as everybody wins. Everybody wins. The more you create yourself and you help others to do the same, the better the process moves. So it's okay to help others to be successful in some financial sense because everybody's a winner. Everybody is co-creating with their creator and doing something that is beneficial, especially when they're helping others to do the same thing, you see. You're promoting not just the material side of life, you're promoting the spiritual side of life, and you want to do that. Okay, I hope that's making some sense. So if you're in a business, think about this as really an important element. If you're not in a business and you work for a business, then think about it as being the same thing. You and the business are really just being exemplified in the way that you express yourself through what you do. Many people work for some kind of business, of course. And when they do, they don't identify that business as doing things that are good. And they aren't therefore advocating, in a creative sense, some ways to benefit the business. They're just maybe doing their job, so to speak. But then they're not taking responsibility for the business. Now you can say, well, my employer doesn't work with me that way. Well, you don't have to work for the employer then. Go work for someone who does. Because those people who are in business or have a company or have whatever kind of thing that you're working for, even if it's your teacher and you're working for the city or whatever, or the state or whatever, the thing is that you still can exemplify a creative approach, you see. And that's part of it. That is an important part of it. And it doesn't come from just being only responsible for your little part of the niche. It comes from taking a greater level of responsibility for all elements and trying to be creative in every way possible. Do what you can. And you might say, well, what about that first thing you said about the government? What about when the government prevents businesses from doing anything creative or from even public institutions from doing anything creative? Well, that's the problem with tyranny. It destroys spirituality and it destroys creativity. There's no question about it. That will be the outcome, unfortunately. Okay, what about the wise giving part? How can we improve that? Well, some of that already came in when I was just talking about creativity, but if we're going to focus in on givingness, then be very aware of what you have that you can give to others. It can be an understanding. It can be, some levels of knowledge. It can be many things in a material sense. But the most important thing is that whatever you give, you're helping those others to become more giving as the primary purpose in you in doing what you're doing. That's the thing to do. You have to start with that. You can't finish with that. So the first thing you say is, how is it that what I'm doing is going to help this person or people, these people or this person, to become more creatively and wisely giving themselves? And then, whether it also gives to them some other material things or whatever, fine, it's okay. That's not a problem, provided you're helping them to become more giving in the process. Are you helping them to become more responsible in the way that they give, that they keep their agreements and they expand upon their agreements? They take more responsibility than even you're suggesting in your relationship with them. Those are great things. Fantastic. And I can tell you, nothing makes me feel better in my relationships with people when I see them taking on greater levels of responsibility to be helpful to others so that they can do the same. It's so wonderful when this whole process is working. It's like a miracle, truly. So this is the way you've got to structure the way your life is. And it takes some discipline to do this, because the illusion is, well, I'm just doing it for myself and I don't care about anybody else. You know, the weird thing about it is the people that are going to know that you're doing this are the people that are doing it themselves, and the rest of the people that aren't doing it won't ever notice why you're doing this or that you're doing anything. They're oblivious to it. So don't expect people to be able to see that that is what you're doing when they're not doing it themselves. As a matter of fact, expect the opposite, and you won't have as much a struggle, because then you're outside of the illusion. You realize, yeah, there's a lot of selfish people out there. I can't expect those people to really pick up on what I'm doing here. They're just not going to see it. Now, if it's an extreme level, you may suffer some, because then most of your existence is trying to help people who don't see you and don't appreciate you. And I can tell you, I have a little of that in my life. So, you know, it happens sometimes. But this is part of the spiritual development of a person. We reach stages. Now, most people are not at this stage, but we do reach stages where a good deal of the creative input we do, a good deal of the wise giving we do, is not for most people, because they can't reach that level that we're offering to them. And you can say, well, you can lower your level. You can, but it's better to probably find those who are most able to use what you have rather than to try to just lower it down to the level of those that just happen to be around you at that time. Although sometimes that is the only thing you can do. And if that's true, then you do the best you can in each situation. Don't expect that you're always going to be successful in both avoiding struggle and in being able to be as creative as you would seek to do, and as helpful and increasing freedom for others, and as helpful as increasing wise giving, because it may not be that way. It just may never be that way. You may never actually have everything that you do work out that way. As a matter of fact, majority of it may not. So there's going to be some struggle in life no matter how much you adhere to some of the principles I have, because, again, we live in a world where we are interconnected. And there are others who may not be choosing to live the way I'm suggesting. And they may actually be evil. They may actually be the antithesis of what I'm suggesting that we do. Okay, let's move on. That's kind of not such a nice thought, is it? Okay, so how do we then increase to the best of our abilities, despite everything I just said, the amount that we are being creative with others, the amount that we are wisely giving, the amount we're interacting in ways that leads to a more spiritual life? Well, we look for and we try to communicate with and bring in to our circle of influence and effects those that are doing this at the level approximately where we're at, if at all possible. We do this. And this is something a lot of people, when I talk to them, they seem to reject. They say, well, I meet these people and I don't like them and they don't like me and this and that. Well, they're not really trying to search for others that are doing this. They're not really open to it, and or they're not making active overtures. I know that when I meet people, I pretty much sum up where they're coming from. And if it's someone that looks like, ooh, this person could be benefited by some of the things that I can help them with, I immediately step up. I don't wait for them to, you know, say, oh, please, please help me, or please give me. I take the first efforts. I make those efforts. I try to open the doors. Yeah, sometimes people are a little shy. Sometimes people are, you know, a little leery. They don't know where I'm coming from, what's the motives. But I figured I'm going to figure that out pretty quick because I make it an open door, completely open. And they, you know, there's nothing hidden here. This is where I'm coming from. This is what I'm doing. And the same is true of the people I work with in as a spiritual group. We're trying to do that. And can we do more? Sure. You can always do more. But I'm suggesting that each one of you out there do more. Look for others who are trying to lead a more spiritual life. If they're ahead of you, that's great. Learn from them. If they're behind you or near the same level, then co-create with them as best as you possibly can. And try not to stand in the way of those that are way beyond you. Don't try to upset their creations. And then when it comes to evil and the darkness that's in the world, and there's considerable amounts right now, be aware of it and be willing to fight it if necessary. This is quite difficult. This is probably the most difficult part of today's program because you can't deal with evil without increasing struggle. This is the difficult part about it. So there's no, I can't give you a secret like, oh well, if you're dealing with evil, just say this enchanted saying three times a day and you'll be fine. I mean, some people believe that, but that's not true. When you're confronted with evil, you have a responsibility to try to prevent that evil from harming others and to expose it. Because when evil is exposed, when all darkness is exposed, it goes away. Evil's greatest strength is to be hidden. So you want to unhide it. You want to make sure that others see it and know about it, and it's discovered. And then it pays whatever penalties are constructed within our society to deal with it. See, this is where it gets tough because those of us who are afraid and weak will go hide. And I strongly suggest you don't do that because, again, you've got to take responsibility for others besides just yourself. You could say, well, if I run away from this evil, then it won't affect me. Great. Maybe it won't in this life. It'll probably come back 10 times stronger in the next. And in the meantime, how many others will be harmed by it? How many others will suffer from its terror and from its its power-seeking misery that it invokes? It's a terrible thing that it evokes, I should say. It's a terrible thing because we all have this responsibility, but we have a tendency to respond with fear, which is avoidance, rather than to accept the responsibility of and to challenge it. I can tell you as a group, as a spiritual group, we are doing this on a considerable level. Not because we want to believe it, we don't. It's terrible. The struggles are amazingly difficult because we're taking responsibility for large, big issues, things that, you know, others would shirk away from and say, forget it, you know. And we also take responsibility for anything that we think we have some better understanding about. Even though at the present time, there may be very few others who have that level of understanding to share any of the responsibility. So we're kind of alone in it. Loneliness does come from taking on responsibilities from others who are still in illusion. But if you seek out help, you may find, and you probably will, some others who are willing to step up and work with you. And this is part of the process. You need to be inclusive and be open to that possibility. I can tell you, if any of you out there want to help work with some of the things that we as a spiritual group are doing, you can contact us. We are open to that. We really are. Now, once in a while, someone does say, yeah, I want to try it, and then they do it for a week or two, and they're gone. because it's overwhelming. I mean, there's so many challenges, and they become pretty much overwhelmed. But that doesn't mean that you should just forget about it, because we haven't. You got to just keep trying. Because just because there are some who are going to say, oh, yeah, I really want to do this, and then 5 minutes later, 5 days later, whatever it is, they're gone, that doesn't mean anything. That's just part of the fact that they're an illusion, and they became, for a short time, kind of aspiring. They want to emotionally do something, but the emotion leaves them after a day or two or a week, and it's gone. They just evaporate. I want to talk about inspired. They become aspired, which is an emotional thing. Inspired is something more from the intuitional body, and that's a much higher kind of response. But those are the real ones. That does not happen very often. Okay, what else can we do to bring together this whole metaphysical paradox of struggle? Well, probably the most important thing is to really have a cohesive plan for your entire life of where you're going, what you want to do, and the struggles you're willing to put up with, and the things you're having difficulty with. The things you're having difficulty with, you have to face. And the things that you're great at or good at, you need to share with others to help those others to do the same. So those are that's the incumbent things that we need to adopt if we're going to really overcome the struggle. It doesn't mean that it's all going to go away. So nothing I'm telling you tonight is going to get rid of all struggle. If you want to get rid of all struggle, go to a different world. Earth is not the place to be. But I'm going to tell you right now, you chose to be here. I know it's hard to believe, but you did. As a soul, you're choosing to be here. As a human being, most of us are not. But as a soul, we are. And so consequently, when you get back to the soul level of consciousness, you're going to choose to reincarnate right here again. Most of us will. Some of us may say, or the soul might say, not doing too well in this world. Maybe we'll try someplace a little easier. You know? Earth is in the top 1% of difficulties. It has the most amount of difficulties compared to 99% plus of all the other worlds that have human life on them. And so this is not the easiest place. It's one of the most difficult. But recognize that too. And recognize you're here because you want to be here, even if you can't remember it. And that your choice to be here is because you want to be creative at the highest levels possible. You want to overcome the greatest struggles that humans can endure. And you want to make this world, a really beautiful, sacred, virtuous place. One that represents the God that you know in your heart exists, and you want that to be here, and you see that it isn't, but you're willing to go through a lot, a huge amount, to make that change. You've got to convince yourself of that, by the way. I can't convince you of it. You need to come to that conclusion yourself to really overcome a good deal of the struggle, because once you convince yourself of that, the illusion is mostly gone, and therefore the struggles reduce. They don't go away, but they significantly reduce because you're making fewer and fewer mistakes, and as you make better and better choices, the struggles become easier. Those are the answers that I can give you for right now in how to improve upon your own existence here. And remember this, that if I'm wrong, you're going to find out anyway, right? And if I'm right, what have you got to lose by checking this out? And I'm certain that you're going to all find out a lot of the stuff that I'm talking about as being correct, because once we leave this physical realm and we go to the next, the astral, it isn't like magic, but there's some improvement in consciousness. And of course, the first thing is, oh yeah, that guy used to yak on the radio all the time. He was right. Here it is. This is this other dimension, the time and space that we're all living in now. And, oh, it's cool. And death really doesn't exist. You just change the form that you're existing in. Oh, this is just like what he talked about. Of course, you won't be in physical world anymore, where you could struggle the most and overcome the most. But at least you'll have the satisfaction of saying, well, hey, I kind of understand this a little better now. And maybe then you'll make a little more progress. Hopefully these programs will then make even more sense. But why not try to do something now? Why not improve your life right now so that you don't have to wait for that time when it is more than obvious that some of the things that I'm saying are correct? Okay, so what else? What's the last part of this equation if we're really going to get to that element that I'm saying of trying to reduce the struggle of paradox, but not you can't eliminate it? Well, by not seeing it as a paradox anymore. The final thing is to see it as truly God's plan. The reason this world is such a struggle is because it has been just about overrun at times by evil. We have a terrible past. Anybody who reads about history, or if you can remember any prior lives or anything, knows how terrible of a world this has been. And this is the world we chose to come to because it's so much in need of improvement and for us to take greater responsibility to make a difference. It's scary because it's so bad. But God has to have some places that are like this because there's freedom. If there was no freedom and God said, oh, I'm not going to allow any bad earths, get rid of them, you know, well, that'd be interesting, but life would become kind of shallow and not as meaningful. Now we've got these places which are can be very meaningful to change around and to become more godlike. So recognize that the paradox is meant to be there so that we can find the true value of God and appreciate God at a much higher level, a God that doesn't intervene and that chooses to allow us to be something much greater. Wow. And to eventually become as great as it is, at least as it is today. So this is a wondrous universe. And when we come to those conclusions, then the struggle becomes most, we'll say, tolerable. And the paradox is not so much a paradox anymore as a greater understanding of the big picture. That's what you really want to get to, and hopefully you will. I really would love for all of you to get to that position. I struggle with it. We all struggle with it. Because that's the nature of being here. It's the nature of what we came here for. Not to struggle, but to overcome the struggle over time. That's the eventual goal. Okay, I want to mention if you haven't gotten some, I know a number of people who are using Soul Balance and are getting some tremendous benefits from it. You can get it. Yes, you can get it by checking it out. At the website, and I'm trying to look at where the website is someplace. Oh, here it is. Okay, it's on the next page. So it's at, for information, it's Life Balance Association. And for information, you can call 602-472-5127. And this stuff really works. If you have any kind of serious, we'll call it health problems due to imbalance in your centers, this stuff is great. Check it out. If you haven't heard about Ideal Cell Sorption or Resveratrol, you can get it from foreveryoungproducts.com, 800-777-7850. This stuff really works. It's great. Works on your pets. There's a formula for your pets, and it works on yourself. It makes you, it keeps you younger. It helps in a number of different ways to improve both your physical and your, we'll say, your whole health situation, and it makes it's like the fountain of youth. It makes you look younger, feel younger, and you will live longer if you use it according to the instructions. I am using it, and maybe I'm crazy, but I sure look a lot younger than I did. So I'm going backwards. See? At least that's what I think. Now you may think different. We'll see. All right. And if you want to get a hold of me, you can call me. You can email me at thoughts@whylifeis.com. I'd love to hear from you. Well, we're out of time for right now. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.